Chapter 13 relates the happiest day of Samuel Titmarsh's life. I don't know how it was that in the course of the next 6 months, Mr. Roundhand, the actuary, who had been such a profound admirer of Mr. Bro and the West Didlisex Association, suddenly quarreled with both, and taking his money out of the concern, he disposed of his 5,000 L. worth of shares to a pretty good profit, and went away, speaking everything that was evil both of the company and the director. Mr. Imore now became secretary and actuary, Mr. Abednego was first clerk, and your humble servant was second in the office at a salary of 250 L. a year. How unfounded were Mr. Roundhand's aspersions of the West Didlisex appeared quite clearly at our meeting in January, 1823, when our chief director, in one of the most brilliant speeches ever heard, declared that the half-yearly dividend was 4 L. percent, at the rate of 8 L. percent, per annum, and I sent to my aunt 120 L. sterling as the amount of the interest of the stock in my name. My excellent aunt, Mrs. Haggarty, delighted beyond measure, sent me back 10 L. for my own pocket, and asked me if S.E. had not better sell Slopperton and Squashtail, and invest all her money in this admirable concern. On this point I could not surely do better than ask the opinion of Mr. Bro. Mr. B. told me that shares could not be had but at a premium, but on my representing that I knew of 5,000 L. worth in the market at par, he said, if so, he would like a fair price for his, and would not mind disposing of 5,000 L. worth, as he had rather a glut of West Didlisex shares, and his other concerns wanted feeding with ready money. At the end of our conversation, of which I promised to report the purport to Mrs. Haggarty, the director was so kind as to say that he had determined on creating a place of private secretary to the managing director, and that I should hold that office with an additional salary of 150 L. I had 250 L. a year, Miss Smith had 70 L. per annum to her fortune. What had I said should be my line of conduct whenever I could realize 300 L. a year? Gus, of course, and all the gents in our office through him, knew of my engagement with Mary Smith. Her father had been a commander in the Navy and a very distinguished officer, and though Mary, as I have said, only brought me a fortune of 70 L. a year, and I, as everybody said, in my present position in the office and the City of London, might have reasonably looked out for a lady with much more money, yet my friends agreed that the connection was very respectable, and I was content. As who would not have been with such a darling as Mary? I am sure, for my part, I would not have taken the Lord Mayor's own daughter in place of Mary, even with a plum to her fortune. Mr. Bro, of course, was made aware of my approaching marriage, as of everything else relating to every clerk in the office, and I do believe Abednego told him what we had for dinner every day. Indeed, his knowledge of our affairs was wonderful. He asked me how Mary's money was invested. It was in the 3%. Consols 2,333 L. 6s. 8d. Remember, says he, my lad, Mrs. Sam Titmarsh, that is to be, may have 7% for her money at the very least, and on better security than the Bank of England, for is not a company of which John Bro is the head better than any other company in England? And to be sure, I thought he was not far wrong, and promised to speak to Mary's guardians on the subject before our marriage. Lieutenant Smith, her grandfather, had been at the first very much averse to our union. I must confess that, one day finding me alone with her, and kissing, I believe, the tips of her little fingers, he had taken me by the collar, and turned me out of doors. But Sam Titmarsh, with a salary of 250 L. a year, a promised fortune of 150 L. more, and the right-hand man of Mr. John Bro of London, was a very different man from Sam the poor clerk, and the poor clergyman's widow's son, and the old gentleman wrote me a kind letter enough, and begged me to get him 6 pairs of lamb's wool stockings and 4 ditto waistcoats from Romanus's, and accepted them too as a present from me, when I went down in June, in happy June of 1823, to fetch my dear Mary away. Mr. Bro was likewise kindly anxious about my aunt's Slopperton and Squashtail property, which as he had not as yet sold, as she talked of doing, and, as Mr. B represented, it was a sin and a shame, that any person in whom he took such interest, as he did in all the relatives of his dear young friend, should only have 3% for her money, when she could have 8 elsewhere. He always called me Sam now, praised me to the other young men who brought the praises regularly to me, said there was a cover always laid for me at Fulham, and repeatedly took me thither. There was but little company when I went, and Werder used to say he only asked me on days when he had his vulgar acquaintances. But I did not care for the great people, not being born in their sphere, and indeed did not much care for going to the house at all. Miss Belinda was not at all to my liking. After her engagement with Captain Fizdig, and after Mr. Tidd had paid his 20,000 L, and Fizdig's great relations had joined in some of our director's companies, Mr. Bro declared he believed that Captain Fizdig's views were mercenary, and put him to the proof at once, by saying that he must take Miss Bro without a farthing, or not have her at all. Whereupon Captain Fizdig got an appointment in the colonies, and Miss Bro became more ill-humored than ever. But I could not help thinking she was rid of a bad bargain, and pitying poor Tidd, who came back to the charge again more lovesick than ever, and was rebuffed pitilessly by Miss Belinda. Her father plainly told Tidd too, that his visits were disagreeable to Belinda, and though he must always love and value him, he begged him to discontinue his calls at the rookery. Poor fellow! He had paid his 20,000 L. Away for nothing. For what was 6%? To him compared to 6%. And the hand of Miss Belinda Bro? Well, Mr. Bro pitied the poor lovesick swain, as he called me, so much, and felt such a warm sympathy in my well-being, that he insisted on my going down to Somersetshire with a couple of months' leave. And away I went, as happy as a lark, with a couple of brand new suits from Von Stiltz's in my trunk I had them made, looking forward to a certain event, and inside the trunk Lieutenant Smith's fleecy hosiery, wrapping up a parcel of our prospectuses, and 2 letters from John Bro Esquire, to my mother our worthy annuitant, and to Mrs. Haggarty our excellent shareholder. Mr. Bro said I was all that the fondest father could wish, that he considered me as his own boy, and that he earnestly begged Mrs. Haggarty not to delay the sale of her little landed property, as the land was high now and must fall, whereas the West Idlesex Association shares were comparatively low, and must inevitably, in the course of a year or two, double, treble, quadruple their present value. In this way I was prepared, and in this way I took leave of my dear Gus. As we parted in the yard of the Old Inn, Fleet Street, I felt that I never should go back to Salisbury Square again, and had made my little present to the landlady's family accordingly. She said I was the respectablest gentleman as he had ever had in her house. Nor was that saying much, for Bell Lane is in the rules of the Fleet, and her lodgers used commonly to be prisoners on rule from that place. As for Gus, the poor fellow cried and blubbered, so that he could not eat a morsel of the muffins and grilled ham with which I treated him for breakfast in the Old Inn coffee house, and when I went away was waving his hat and his handkerchief so in the archway of the coach office, that I do believe the wheels of the Rue Bleue went over his toes, for I heard him roaring as we passed through the arch. Ah! How different were my feelings as I sat proudly there on the box by the side of Jim Ward, the coachman, to those I had the last time I mounted that coach, parting from my dear Mary and coming to London with my diamond pin. When arrived near home at Crumpley, 3 miles from our village, where the Rublu generally stops to take a glass of ale at the Poppleton Arms, it was as if our member, Mr. Poppleton himself, was come into the country, so great was the concourse of people assembled round the inn. And there was the landlord of the inn, and all the people of the village. Then there was Tom Wheeler, the postboy, from Mrs. Rinser's posting hotel in our town. He was writing on the old bay posters, and they, heaven bless us, were drawing my aunt's yellow chariot, in which she never went out, but thrice in a year, and in which she now sat in her splendid cashmere shawl, and a new hat and feather. She waved a white handkerchief out of the window, and Tom Wheeler shouted out, "Uzza!" as did a number of the little blackguard boys of Crumply, who, to be sure, would huzzah for anything. What a change on Tom Wheeler's part, however. I remembered only a few years before how he had whipped me from the box of the chaise, as I was hanging on for a ride behind. Next to my aunt's carriage came the four-wheeled chaise of Lieutenant Smith, R.N.N., who was driving his old fat pony with his lady by his side. I looked in the back seat of the chaise, and felt a little sad at seeing that somebody was not there. But, oh silly fellow, there was somebody in the yellow chariot with my aunt, blushing like a peony, I declare, and looking so happy. Oh, so happy and pretty. She had a white dress, and a light blue and yellow scarf, which my aunt said were the Haggarty colors, though what the Haggartys had to do with light blue and yellow, I don't know to this day. Well, the Rublu guard made a great bellowing on his horn as his four horses dashed away. The boys shouted again. I was placed bodkin between Mrs. Haggarty and Mary. Tom Wheeler cut into his bays. The lieutenant, who had shaken me cordially by the hand, and whose big dog did not make the slightest attempt at biting me this time, beat his pony till its fat sides lathered again. And thus in this, I may say, unexampled procession, I arrived in triumph at our village. My dear mother and the girls, heaven bless them. Nine of them in their nankeen spencers, I had something pretty in my trunk for each of them, could not afford a carriage, but had posted themselves on the road near the village, and there was such a waving of hands and handkerchiefs. And though my aunt did not much notice them, except by a majestic toss of the head, which is pardonable in a woman of her property, yet Mary Smith did even more than I, and waved her hands as much as the whole nine. Ah! How my dear mother cried, and blessed me when we met, and called me her soul's comfort and her darling boy, and looked at me, as if I were a paragon of virtue and genius. Whereas I was only a very lucky young fellow, that by the aid of kind friends had stepped rapidly into a very pretty property. I was not to stay with my mother, that had been arranged beforehand. For though she and Mrs. Haggarty were not remarkably good friends, yet mother said it was for my benefit, that I should stay with my aunt, and so give up the pleasure of having me with her. And though hers was much the humbler house of the two, I need not say I preferred it far to Mrs. Haggarty's more splendid one, let alone the horrible Rosolio, of which I was obliged now to drink gallons. It was to Mrs. H.'s then we were driven. He had prepared a great dinner that evening, and hired an extra waiter, and on getting out of the carriage, she gave a sixpence to Tom Wheeler, saying that was for himself, and that she would settle with Mrs. Rinser for the horses afterwards. At which Tom flung the sixpence upon the ground, swore most violently, and was very justly called by my aunt an impertinent fellow. She had taken such a liking to me, that she would hardly bear me out of her sight. We used to sit for morning after morning over her accounts, debating for hours together the propriety of selling the Slopperton property, but no arrangement was come to yet about it, for Hodge and Smithers could not get the price she wanted. And, moreover, she vowed that at her decease she would leave every shilling to me. Hodge and Smithers, too, gave a grand party, and treated me with marked consideration, as did every single person of the village. Those who could not afford to give dinners gave teas, and all drank the health of the young couple, and many a time after dinner or supper was my Mary made to blush by the allusions to the change in her condition. a happy day for, that ceremony was now fixed, and the 24th July, 1823 saw me the happiest husband of the prettiest girl in Somersetshire. We were married from my mother's house, who would insist upon that at any rate, and the 9 girls acted as bridesmaids. And Gus Hoskins came from town express to be my groomsman, and had my old room at my mother's, and stayed with her for a week, and cast a sheep's eye upon Miss Winnie Titmarsh too, my dear fourth sister, as I afterwards learned. My aunt was very kind upon the marriage ceremony, indeed. As he had desired me some weeks previous to order 3 magnificent dresses for Mary from the celebrated Madame Mantelini of London, and some elegant trinkets and embroidered pocket handkerchiefs from Powell and James. These were sent down to me, and were to be my present to the bride. But Mrs. Haggerty gave me to understand that I need never trouble myself about the payment of the bill, and I thought her conduct very generous. Also she lent us her chariot for the wedding journey, and made with her own hands a beautiful crimson satin reticule for Mrs. Samuel Titmarsh, her dear niece. It contained a huswife completely furnished with needles, and see, for she hoped Mrs. Titmarsh would never neglect her needle, and a purse containing some silver pennies, and a very curious pocket piece. As long as you keep these, my dear, said Mrs. Haggerty, you will never want. And fervently do I pray, that you will keep them. In the carriage pocket we found a paper of biscuits and a bottle of Rosolio. We laughed at this, and made it over to Tom Wheeler who, however, did not seem to like it much better than we. I need not say I was married in Mr. Von Stiltz's coat, the 3rd and 4th coats, heaven help us, in a year, and that I wore sparkling in my bosom the great Haggerty diamond. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.